Does Cohen's plea mean we're in a Watergate moment? We'll talk about it on The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are The Uprising. With Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president! Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
The media resorts to personal attacks without any content other than to incite anger.
This is The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. Tim and Scott with you this week. And Scott, so much material, so little time, as is usually the case. But I want to start out with a soundbite from the inestimable Reverend Al Sharpton. But I'm not going to include just the part that got all the publicity this week, because we uncovered a troubling pattern of behavior by President Trump last week. And this was one of the few places to unmask the president's apparent dislike for dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I said, this is more deeply troubling
worse than Hitler.
Worse than Hitler, because Hitler liked dogs, and
or
Trump
his own
doesn't.
Dog in any case.
Well, his own dog and perhaps others.
Right.
But he did like that one dog at least. There is no evidence.
He wasn't anti all dogs like the president of the United States.
Like this president, who apparently despises dogs.
The first president in history.
And the reason that we know this is because he doesn't own a dog. He's the first president in more than 100 years not to.
Brian Williams led reporting on this last week, I believe.
It did. He led the research team in looking into this. And, of course, he's part of NBC, which contains MSNBC.
Mm-hmm.
And the Reverend Al, who has a show Sundays on MSNBC, despite the fact that
great
he ruined the lives of millions of people. Well, I'm not going to say millions. At least,
dozens,
how many people in the Tawana Brawley thing?
I mean,
but the guy still has credibility.
Wait a second. Not just Tawana Brawley. Freddie's Fashion Mart. Youssef, whatever that guy was.
Yep.
Yankel Rosenbaum. I mean, we could go through the list, right? I mean,
it's a long list.
Yeah.
But The Reverend Sharpton does make a very significant and deeply important point as he leads up to the famous part of his soundbite this week. And this is about how the president picks on people by using dog analogies. Listening to this, Scott, see if you find this as deeply troubling as I do.
Steve Bannon was, quote, dumped like a dog. You tweeted after he was fired. Sally Yates, you said she choked like a dog during her Senate testimony on the Russia investigation. And now Amorosa. That doesn't include all those outside your orbit you've hit with a canine cutdown. Like when you referred to black NFL players as sons of, well, female dogs. So in the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
Okay, now I think people were way too transfixed on the fact that the esteemed Reverend couldn't spell respect properly,
mm-hmm.
R-E-S-P-I-C-T, but they lose the fact that he is illuminating, Scott, the fact that this president is worse than Hitler because he doesn't even like dogs, like the German Nazi dictator.
It gets even worse than that, Tim. I'm going to come out of left field for
you. Oh, boy. Here we go.
This is something that I've been meaning to talk about since her passing. Aretha Franklin did not write the song Respect. She covered it, okay?
She covered it. She just sang it.
No, that is a cover song. That's an Otis Redding song that he made that's about a man wanting respect from a woman. And
really?
Aretha Franklin got permission to cover it, and he let her. It's his words and his song.
I didn't know
And it's about a man getting respect from a woman.
Really?
That's exactly right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Let it not be said that we do not uncover new information on this incredibly informative and entertaining podcast.
Maybe new for the listener, Tim. Not new for those of us who consider Motown to be America's soundtrack.
It is. All right? It is for me, too. Now, let's go. I mean, there's so many to cover and so little time, as I said at the start, but let's go to the next one. Relating to the Michael Cohen plea.
The recently admitted felon, Michael Cohen.
Right. However, he's now a hero on the left. You know, before he was called a sleaze and a fixer and everything short of a murderer and maybe even that. But now, Scott, Michael Cohen is a hero.
He may be the best thing that ever happened to this country, Tim.
It's worthy of debate, but that's worthy of that assertion is worthy of serious consideration. But let's hear the reaction to the Michael Cohen plea deal from the man. I don't know whether you'd say he's as esteemed as Reverend Sharpton, but he probably comes close. This is Richard Blumenthal, the left-wing senator from Connecticut, responding to on the day that Michael Cohen made his plea in terms of putting it into some historical context.
Right. Today is going to be historic. We'll all remember what we were doing when we heard this news about Michael Cohen implicating the president in a very, very serious crime. And the White House is looking increasingly like a criminal enterprise. We're in a Watergate moment.
A Watergate moment.
All right, well, let me just say this. The president may well be a felon. He may have committed a federal crime. But if this is a very, very serious federal crime, what is an unserious crime? I mean, presumably, if we say that there are serious ones and unserious ones, if...
It depends on whether it's a Trump associate committing it.
Just so people are clear, we talk about this in various venues, so I don't know that we've laid it out with specificity on the podcast. If the president is, in fact, guilty of a crime, if we believe Michael Cohen's testimony, and we also believe that it applies to Donald Trump, and what I mean by that is if Donald Trump paid these women in order to change the outcome of an election or as a contribution in an election, then he may very well may be guilty of failure to report this campaign contribution or issuing the contribution from an entity from which it couldn't be
issued
from.
Now, that sounds like Watergate to me.
Right. So how is that a serious crime? So Donald Trump paid a porn star to keep quiet from an account that, under the regulations of law, he couldn't have paid her out of that account and had to pay her for it. Seriously? This is what this person... So, I mean, I really want to drill down on this point, Tim. This, I think, is vitally important. The idea that this is a serious crime, I think, is ridiculous. Now, I said, I think, on the radio show, and I'll say it again here, I believe that Donald Trump probably is guilty of multiple felonies because it's very hard not to be in the current environment that we have, or, excuse me, current, not current like this last week or month, but... The state of federal law and regulation in this country is such that if you're engaged in all sorts of financial transactions, all sorts of international business transactions, it's very hard to do that and not be able to find some prosecutor somewhere that could make a colorable case against you for violating the law.
Okay, you got all serious on us for a minute, but I want to replay just the start of that Blumenthal cut again, because there's a part that I really want to address. Okay.
Today is going to be historic. We'll all remember what we were doing when we heard this news about Michael Cohen. Uh-huh.
Okay, so there you go. So, Scott, there's...
All right, how many days ago
Wait a minute now. I need to put it in the historical context.
Sure.
Don't interrupt me.
Go ahead.
Okay, there's Pearl Harbor Day.
Not talking now.
Okay, Pearl Harbor Day, the JFK assassination,
right.
9/11, and the day that Michael Cohen...
No, OJ. Got to add OJ's the Bronco chase.
No, that doesn't rise to this same level. Sorry. But we'll all remember. Those are those unique days where we'll all remember where we were when we heard the news that Pearl Harbor had been attacked.
I can't even remember where the heck I was.
That JFK had been killed, that 9/11 occurred, and Michael Cohen said that he, the fixer, paid off a hooker.
I know
I remember now where
I was. I was sitting at my desk at home thinking about dinner plans, and then I looked up and I said, "Well, I guess I'm not going to be going out for dinner now."
Like, your life
changed. Have to stay home and write an article about this.
Your life changed overnight,
it
Scott.
Is. I didn't go out for dinner at all.
But wait, that's not all.
I made a grilled cheese instead, Tim. I'll remember it.
A change of plan. Never forget that. It actually is true that you do never forget a meal. Yeah. I can attest to that. You are a foodie among foodies. You live and breathe food. But that's not all, okay, from the left in terms of outrage this week. We were in the political realm with the esteemed Senator Blumenthal, who, by the way, let me just make one more remark about him. You may recall that Senator Blumenthal was the one that, when he ran for Senate initially, claimed to have served in Vietnam, and we later found out that he didn't. So what he is guilty of is stolen valor, which I personally consider one of the most despicable offenses against society as a whole.
But unlike misreporting a payoff to a porn star to conceal a single night sexual dalliance, not a violation of the federal law.
No, that's true. You're right.
Not a violation.
Are you sure
of
that? I mean, as we discussed on the radio show, there's no way. I mean, literally, people have tried to do it.
The Supreme Court struck down the Stolen Valor Act, so it's that's actually been ruled on.
Well, that's a legal thing. But what I'm saying is that. Well, I'm not gonna. We got too much to cover here. But you know, suddenly, Senator Blumenthal, in his legal act of stolen valor, and then he was reelected in the leftist state of Connecticut after being initially elected, he's now suddenly looking all grim and serious that we're in a Watergate moment and we'll never forget where we were or when Michael Cohen.
He was a Watergate era human being, so he was there on the ground at Watergate, right? He should know.
Okay, but I digress. I want to play you from the entertainment realm. The favorite, one of the favorites, one of the darlings of the left. They listen to this guy as if his word is basically divinely inspired.
Certainly.
And his name is Bill Maher, and he is convinced.
Divinely inspired is a particularly humorous way to
describe Bill Maher.
Famous as an atheist.
He is absolutely convinced, and anybody would be if they even look at the evidence, that Donald Trump is a Russian spy.
I'm sorry, but it's super obvious already. He is a Russian asset. This has been going on since the 80s. They were targeting for this. And Bob Mueller's report is just going to be, it's going to be foolproof.
There you go. Foolproof, Scott.
Did you sweeten that, or is that
no,
real?
No, that's real.
He really said that?
He really said that. And you know, what I say is, look, let's just save the trouble. Let's just march into the White House, pull the president out, throw him in prison, and save the whole process.
Knock the glass of Stoli out of his hand and cart him off to Moscow. Maybe we could do an exchange. We still have some assets that are being held in prison there, don't we?
Only by the Obama administration.
No, I mean, we make a deal with the Russians. Yeah. We exchange their agent, Trump, for some of our agents that they have in custody. I mean, he must be a high-level agent.
Sure.
He is president of the United States,
sure,
right?
Sure, that would be. I could think of some leftists who would actually prefer Vladimir Putin to be the U.S. president if they could.
So Trump's a Russian asset, but John Brennan said he was a communist and also converted to Wahhabi Islam while in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, right? I mean,
Do we know that? Because I've asserted that before and had people push back on it. Do we know for sure
you're a bigot for even thinking about it, Tim? That's what the legacy media wants you to think.
Well, and you just said it. You're even
bigot
worse
for even thinking about it.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate that. I consider that a badge of honor. Now, you mentioned John Brennan, which makes a very nice, neat, clean segue into a bunch of statements by John Brennan, because, of course, the deep state, which we used to call the permanent DC bureaucracy, is inflamed with anger that John Brennan, the man who voted for a communist for president in the 1976 election, I believe, Gus Hall. And he admitted it, and the guy was heading the CIA. I mean, if you think about that, a guy that voted for a communist for president was the director of our CIA. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he had a security clearance strip because he basically went unhinged on the air.
So let's just lay this out. John Brennan said that the president of the United States was guilty of treason. Treason being one of three crimes enumerated in the Constitution, the penalty for which is death.
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that John Brennan believes that the current president of the United States should be put to death for treason. Talk about insubordination. I don't get how you get more than that.
Let me back up a step to something that happened this summer. And I was at a gathering of people out on the West Coast, and we were having a discussion about politics. And this guy, who seemed like a very sort of normal, straight at you, kind of person, well educated in the Ivy League, knowledgeable, successful. In fact, probably from the family of a very wealthy family, whose name you would probably know. We're sitting there discussing things, and everything is normal. And then I said, "So, what do you think about Trump? I mean, what do you expect might happen?" He looked at me and he said, "Well, one of two things. He'll either be put to death."
Mm-hmm.
He actually said that. He'll be put to death, or I don't even remember the second part. It's like he'll be imprisoned or something like that. But this is what this president has done, has warped the minds of these otherwise
hey, people get killed over a $100 card game. They're going to get killed over a $100 trillion game that these people play.
You bet. So anyway, Brennan was then confronted after the security clearance was stripped from him and asked whether he really meant it when he said that Trump was treasonous. And he gave a variety of answers.
And I did say that it rises to and exceeds the level of high crimes and misdemeanors and is nothing short of treasonous. I didn't mean that he committed treason, but it was a term that I used, nothing short of treasonous.
Well, you didn't mean that he committed treason, though.
I said it's nothing short of treasonous. That was the term that I used, yeah.
I am going to do whatever I can personally to try to prevent these abuses in the future. And if it means going to court, I will do that. I have seen the lights blinking red in terms of what Mr. Trump has done and is doing. I think I need to speak out. And so I've been speaking out rather forcefully because I believe it's important to do so. I don't believe I'm being political at all.
That's the best part. I don't believe I'm being political at all. But can you decipher that for us?
What a hero, right?
Because
there.
He said, he said,
thank God for men like John Brennan and the body politics.
We can sleep safer at night, Scott, knowing that John Brennan is...
I wish you put a glory, glory, hallelujah backing track on that, on that statement.
Damn, I didn't have the time to do that in pre-production. Yeah. But Brennan, even his colleague, James Clapper, who was the head of... What was he? The head of the National Security Agency?
Yes.
He was the director of National Intelligence. I'm sorry.
Another guy who lied to Congress about the data they were stealing.
Multiple times.
Right, okay.
Even he said that Brennan is out of control.
Mm-hmm.
But he has become a subject of great sympathy and empathy in the D.C. swamp. And in light of his security clearance being stripped, we take you to our next unbelievable clip. This is from where else? CNN.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an exchange between Paris Denard, a black guy who's a Trump supporter, and a guy named Phil Mudd.
Yeah, I heard this clip. And boy, I think that it's fair to say that Mr. Mudd may be having a...
psychotic break?
Some kind of a... I feel like it's not appropriate for us to make fun of him because of how much of a... It's maybe a medical issue, but go ahead. I mean, is it he's unhinged in a way that is funny to make fun of? Or I really think it may cross the line of him being like, is this guy...
Well, he's become
is he through the looking glass here?
I'm not a psychiatrist, and I don't play one on TV, but it could be. Now, there's a postscript to this, which we need to cover after we hear this exchange between Paris Denard, the Trump supporter, and this guy.
And before you play it, I just want to say this for people who don't live in the region. You and I both know a dozen people that have security clearances. It's not uncommon at all. This is a company town. People work for the government or companies that work and do business with the government. And, people from janitors up to CEOs have security clearances. It's fairly common, and they do trade on it, meaning it does help you get a job with a place that has a security clearance requirement because it's expensive for that company to go out and buy you one if they need to. So if I own a business and I clean up after people on Air Force bases, for instance, and then they need secret security clearance, the cleaning staff, I can hire somebody without that clearance, but then before they can start work, I have to pay and wait for them to be cleared. It's a very cumbersome process, and it does add value to job candidates who have that clearance in place.
Now, the thing about a security clearance is that when someone leaves the government and they take the security clearance with them, it allows them to monetize that clearance in the form of appearances on TV, radio, newspapers, etc.
Or just non-media work, yes.
But also... for contractor work with the government. If you have a security clearance, you're at a level above those who do not have a security clearance. And when Paris Denard pointed this out to Phil Mudd, he absolutely lost it.
How much do you think I'm paid to do that at the request of the U.S. government? Give me one answer and you got 10 seconds. How much?
I'll ask you a question. How much are you paid for your consulting and contracting gig for being a former
I have no contracts with the U.S. government that pay money. Zero.
And this is the thing.
I'm not talking about the federal government.
I'm not talking about your role with the federal government. I'm talking about the contracting gigs that you get from being a consultant and a contractor. The consulting firms that they form and that you all get is because you get more money for having the security clearance. When you have a security clearance and you keep it.
I have zero relationships with the private sector that involve my security clearance. Zero. I get $0 from consulting companies that deal with the U.S. government. Are we clear?
Well, I will be clear in saying that everybody in Washington, D.C. knows if you don't want to be honest about it, that's on you. But if you have a security clearance and you keep it, you
We're
get
done,
more
Jim.
Money to
We're
have
done.
It.
We're done. Get out.
He kicked him off the show, and it's not his show. It's not his show. And he said, you're out. Get out. Now let me just do the postscript here quickly, Scott. Now, you'd think that our story would be that days later, or hours later, maybe minutes later, that CNN would take the unhinged, mentally now unstable victim of apparently a psychotic break, Phil Mudd, and remove him from the air, perhaps for his own protection. But no. You know what they did?
No, I don't.
2 or 3 days later,
they gave him his own show or something like that.
They fired the other guy, Paris Denard, on as yet unproven allegations of sexual misconduct, which they suddenly happened to discover right after their boy from the deep state look like a fool on national
CNN TV.
CNN
is, you know.
I mean, it just.
Yeah.
I'd like to say they've lost every remaining shred of credibility, but we said that like a year ago, so there's nothing new with that. So, Scott, I want to go back to the Russia collusion story, and almost unwittingly, I think about 3 weeks ago on LibertyNation.com, our own Kelly Ballard wrote a story where she referred to the Russian collusion story in a sort of in passing, and then I realized she was referring to the Russian dossier and the connections between the Obama Justice Department and officials in Russia that helped set up the whole thing that basically led to the
one oligarch who paid for, we believe, the seed money for it, right? Whatever that guy's name is.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Whatever his name was. Right. It's Russian. We can get away with
Oleg,
not remembering the name.
Something or other. Volchenkov.
Vladimir. Right. Fill in the blank.
Yeah.
But this story is just it's a given on the left in most of America. It's an absolute given that Trump was guilty, that he's probably a Russian spy, that he should be removed at office at a minimum and perhaps thrown into prison for the rest of his life, et cetera, et cetera. But when you think of leftists, hardcore, anarchistic leftists, one of the names that will come to mind is Noam Chomsky.
Oh, yeah. Top of the food chain over there.
No one is further to the left and more rebellious than Noam Chomsky. So
famous linguist.
He was asked about the Russia collusion story, and he started out this by saying that the real crime being committed by this administration is an ignorance to climate change, that he's putting the entire planet in danger, and that to say it's evil doesn't begin to touch it. That's just to set up what he then said when he talked about Russian collusion. And listen to what he said.
Did the Russians interfere in our elections? An issue of overwhelming concern in the media. I mean, in most of the world, that's almost a joke.
Now, that's from a guy who's as far to the left as you can possibly get. I mean, he makes someone like Maxine Waters look like a movement conservative.
Yeah. I mean, is he saying that their concern is a jerk, is a joke, or the idea that they meddled in our elections. I'm actually not clear as to what means there.
It's a joke because I'm interpreting here. Noam and I are not
simpatico.
Close. We're not close. But I'm gonna sort of speculate that what he meant here was that the American left, as seen by the rest of the world, is blaming everything on Russia.
A joke because that's where they are with this Russian collusion narrative.
But he may also mean everybody knows that Trump isn't a Russian agent. I mean, even he might be. If Noam Chomsky says that, what does it say about
the rest
of the
world?
When
does Trump start doing stuff that the Russians want? That's just my one question for the people who are behind. Like, when is he activated? Is it the second term? Is the first term just a burlesque in order to get to the second term, where he actually does what the Russians want in Syria, does what the Russians want with respect to the oil, which is their biggest thing, does what the Russians want with respect to Ukraine and everywhere else in the world?
When does
Donald Trump start doing anything to benefit Russians if he's a Russian agent?
You just set me up perfectly, because what he could do is simply use Obama's line, which he used on the Stooge, second in command under Putin in 2011 or 12, where he said, tell Vladimir we'll have more flexibility after the election.
He said it to himself, yeah. He said it to Putin personally, right?
No, he said it to Putin's...
Oh, it was a second? I thought it was him. Okay.
That little guy that was the president, he was the president, quote-unquote.
Oh, yeah.
You know, taking orders from Putin, but he had a higher title at that time to make it look good. He ought to just use that same line. Tell Vladimir I'll have more flexibility after the 2020
Hillary
election.
Hillary wanted to go to war with Russia, okay? Barack wants to, Obama wants to do business with him, and Trump just seems to want some sort of advancing U.S. interests and not antagonizing Russian interests. Is that what his sort of... Forget about what they've articulated, but what has their actual policies been, right?
Well,
those are the policies
and
we've
that's
seen.
What I've always tried to point out. If you look at the actual policies towards Russia, the first thing you'd want to do if you were trying to go easy on them or colluding with them or make it better for Putin is you would want to make the price of oil rise because the
100%.
Entire Russian economy is based on oil. And yet what Trump has done by opening up the Keystone Pipeline and others and deregulating the energy industry has driven down the price of oil.
Let's add another component to that, which is Europe gets their oil and natural gas from Russia. Okay, so our production, even if it doesn't actually go to Europe, which it does increasingly go to Europe, driving the price down globally for these commodities drives the profits down for the Russians. So there you go.
Not to mention the military buildup, which is definitely...
So destroying coal, for instance, in Virginia and West Virginia, throughout America, coal production, which drives up the cost of energy, that's a pro-Russian policy.
You mean the Obama policy?
I do mean the Obama policy.
Yes.
Whereas the Trump policy of, you know, let offshore drilling take place, let shale drilling take place, you know, energy production across the board, that's anti-Russian interest.
I did a whole piece right before the summit in Helsinki about, well, if Donald Trump is a Russian agent, then how come he's done all of these things, some of which I pointed out, and also the military buildup, the beat down on the prices and regulation in the energy industries, also tried to stop the Europeans from using Russia as an exclusive supplier by lowering the price, making it more competitive for liquid natural gas, for example, which can be transported on ships to try and cut into the Russian market
in
Europe. And he also bombed Syria very early on and killed a whole bunch of Russian-hired mercenaries. So if he's conspiring with Vladimir Putin, he's got a strange way of showing it.
Yeah, this is some 5D chess we're not yet apprised of, perhaps, that Putin would then be playing, right?
Well,
maybe Noam Chomsky can tell us how that works.
I'll investigate another soundbite from him for next week. Well,
Very good.
I think that's all the fun we're allowed to have.
Okay, well, let's hope next week is not as interesting as this week has been.
This is The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com.
Exhausted by all the fake news? On LibertyNation.com's YouTube channel, facts and fresh, bold analysis are what you get without the leftist spin. Subscribe today to the LibertyNation.com YouTube channel and get our Truth is Making a Comeback, America's Top Stories, with LN Editor-in-Chief Lisa K. Donner, an alternative to the leftist programs on TV. Five facts, just the facts, ma'am, without the liberal bias. LN Radio, syndicated from coast to coast on the Radio America Network. Listen to all the big names in politics with your host, Tim Donner. LN TV, the right analysis with our Liberty Nation authors from across the globe. The Uprising Podcast, fun and entertaining commentary on what's really going on in the swamp with Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner. All this and more when you subscribe to the LibertyNation.com YouTube channel today, because
truth
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 is
making
a comeback.